Here.
Councilmember Edelman.
Here.
Councilmember Benson.
Here.
Councilmember Taylor.
Here.
For recording purposes, I'd like to remind council members to make sure their microphone.
That was weird.
Is there a volume?
Yeah, it's all.
Can you please stand by for just a moment while we adjust the audio? It seems a bit loud still.
It's very touchy.
The other way.
For recording purposes, I'd like to remind council members to make sure their microphones are turned on and wait to be called upon before speaking. I'd also like to announce that item number 2 on the agenda has been pulled so that we can schedule a public hearing. I'd like to entertain a motion to add agenda items 3-8 to the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion from Councilmember Edelman and a second from Councilmember Deedy. All those in favor?
Aye.
The motion passes. I'd also like to entertain a motion to move the reserve police swearing up to first on the agenda tonight.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion from Councilmember Edelman, a second from Councilmember Benson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Should we wait for public comments and go right to this one? Okay. Could the police chief come up, please? Can we do the swearing in now?
Very good.
official to sign.
There's always paperwork.
Whoa.
That could have been bad.
So is that iPad yours there?
Oh, okay.
I got a pen. You need a pen?
Sure.
You'll have a succeeding from the union here.
Call the Ghostbusters.
Phew. Strapper to the wall.
So Jamie, can you, for those that don't know, how many hours and weeks did these guys go through the class?
Well, let me just have them tell you how many hours and how many weeks.
About 5 months. It was 4 hours Tuesday night, Thursday night, and then all day Saturday.
Nice.
And
job.
They do it for free.
Wow,
yeah.
So, there's not any words really, because it's hard enough to find people, but to find really neat people who want to serve their community, it speaks volumes of their character and their service. So, big deal.
It's a huge deal. So, thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
I have to take one out on the street. One's working right now.
Okay. We're now on to the public comment session. Persons wishing to address City Council regarding items of new business are encouraged to do so at this time. When recognized by the mayor, please come up to the table and clearly state your name and address. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. If you desire a formal agenda placement, please contact the city clerk at 360-886-5700. And thank you for attending tonight. Would anyone like to address council? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
My name is Chris Clemens, and my address is 23886 Fairfax. I just live over in Eagle Creek.
Yes, sir.
What I would like to do is I would actually like to ask the council tonight is we've been very fortunate and been allowed to work a booth at the Miner's Day, and it's the dunk tank booth. So I brought one of the boys from my den, who is actually my son, and unfortunately, a lot of our other pack is over at Glacier Park volunteering for their carnival right now. So I'm extending a welcome out to the council to hopefully maybe let the mayor come sit in the dunk tank.
I'd be happy to.
I would really love that. And potentially any of the council members that would like to volunteer for a session is that as well. So,
are you going to heat the water like you did last year?
I would have to ask Myra.
It's really heated
water. So I guess that's all I have to say. So thank you, Mr. Gordon.
Yes, sir.
And thank you, Black Diamond Council, for your time.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address council? Yes, sir.
That's a hard one to follow. Good Good evening. My name is Peter Rimbos, 19711 241st Avenue Southeast, Maple Valley. I am speaking on behalf of the Citizens Technical Action Team. Tonight, the council is to vote on extending MDRT contract, consultant contracts through September 30th to provide time for the city to meet the provisions of RCW 3980 contracts for architectural and engineering services. In the following 3 months, before the contracts again will come up for renewal, we request the council consider making the following effort to better ascertain the quality of work being performed by these firms and whether alternate firms might be in some instances better serving the city. Number one, conduct reviews of each contractor's performance, including what measures are being used to determine compliance with statements of work, schedules, budget, etc. Number two, review recent contractor reports and probe members of staff on the fidelity of contractor analysis results and recommendations. Three, establish direct contact with contractor consultants where appropriate to better understand the level of performance. And number four, based upon the results of this investigation, consider whether any of the current MDRT consultants should be replaced. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to address council? Yes, sir. Mr. Teschner.
Mark Teschner, 30708, 229th Place, Southeast Black Diamond, Lake Sora. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. My concern, let's see, tomorrow's 70 years since our troops hit the beach at Omaha and Utah in France to stop the Germans. And I know a few of them weren't smoking marijuana cigarettes when they did it. And my concern as a conservative and a Republican in this town, which I always will be, is that we're bringing in an attitude that, you know, marijuana is okay. I'm concerned about that even for the sake of the kids. And I realize they call it medicine for some people. But, you know, there's a lot of other people that are on medicine, too, and it doesn't get abused. I know that people in the state of Washington voted it in. Sooner or later, it's going to become the new fun drug. It's going to create a lot of problems. And I'm really against promoting any kind of marijuana sales in this town commercially, even if the law says it's okay. I think it's just wrong. So, you know, I'd rather promote, you know, people drag racing cars down the street. I think it's a lot safer. I'd rather burn that kind of rubber than see people, you know, burning cigarettes and like that, especially when they drive and they get high, because they will. And, I mean, it's just, it makes as much sense as people having a cell phone and text messaging, you know. They say, too, that one of the most dangerous things in Black Diamond is a concerned citizen, but I've met a few ladies with credit cards, too, that are angry, and that's pretty dangerous also. So, anyway, I want to thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Mr. Teschner. Would anyone else like to address council? Okay, we'll call the public comment session closed. We're now on to a presentation on climate change. Matt, would you like to come up to the table, please? And please address council. Thank you.
Good evening. Is this on?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thanks so much for having us. My name is Matt Kuharik. I work for King County, and I'm joined with
Nicole Sanders from City of Snoqualmie.
And I'm going to spend about, you know, half an hour or less with Nicole talking about what's going on across King County cities related to climate action. And I apologize if I'm a little bit out of it. I had my wisdom teeth out just a couple days ago, but I'm getting better. So there are a few things going on in terms of what cities are doing related to climate action, and I think that's part of the reason why we've been invited to speak today. So one is that through the Growth Management Planning Council, countywide policies related to climate change are being considered right now. They're up for a vote at the July Growth Management Planning Council meeting. A second is that the county executive has collaborated with the mayor of Mercer Island to pull together elected officials from across the county in two summits, a first summit in February and a second summit coming up next week on June 12th that all cities in the county are invited to. So we'll talk about some background about that. And then a third reason is that there's a group called the King County Cities Climate Collaboration, which is a voluntary but formal partnership between the county and nine cities where cities commit a small amount of funding and staff time to collaborate on climate action issues. So we'll talk about all of those things today. It's a little bit hard to see this. Maybe I'll try to... Well, I guess it's okay. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the climate science side of things. My background is actually as a climate change scientist. I was a geologist studying glaciers and long-term climate change. I went to grad school at the University of Washington, and I became really concerned about the subject from the science side of things. You know, climate has always changed. And our landscape in the Puget Sound is dominated by pretty recent climate change. We had glaciers covering the Puget Sound 15,000 years ago. And temperatures, when we had glaciers literally 1,000 to 2,000 feet deep over our region, were about 6 degrees colder centigrade compared to what they are now. So I just bring that up as context because when we're talking about a couple degrees of warming, that often doesn't impact people. But the actual magnitude of changes that these types of climate changes that are happening now could have on our ecosystems, economy, environment are really pretty profound. So this graph is just a pretty simple graph showing that, you know, over recent decades, we've had no years where temperatures have been below normal. There's been a pretty consistent trend upward in temperatures correlated well with CO2, which is the main source of human-caused greenhouse gas emissions. So people often talk about climate change as a challenge long off in the future and far away in geography. But as was highlighted in recent news, you may have seen in the last few weeks, in early May, the National Climate Assessment was released, which was the most recent comprehensive update of climate change science for the U.S. And it basically brought home that climate change impacts are here and they're now. And so here are some of the local changes that have occurred in King County and Washington State that have already been documented, that aren't something out in the future, but that are here and, you know, have been measured. Sea level is rising, Puget Sound and the ocean is becoming more acidic. We're having changes in river flows as temperatures warm, more rain in the fall, leading to more runoff, and then less snowpack in the mountains, meaning less water in the streams and rivers in the summer, with significant potential impacts to ecosystems and salmon. In the mountains, it was beautiful driving down here, seeing Mount Rainier. But snowpack is decreasing significantly. And as we have hotter, drier summers and less snowpack, this is leading to increased forest fire impacts. So the question is, you know, these changes have already happened, but they have the potential to be much worse if action to reduce human-caused emissions are not addressed. So in our region, key impacts relate to flooding, for example, related to river flooding, but also severe storm events. Impacts related to forests, both related to forest fire, but also changes in ecosystems as insects can survive winters and have a much increased survivability. And then impacts to marine ecosystems, both through ocean acidification. You may have heard the recent news about impacts to oyster fisheries and things like that. So there's still a lot that can be done to avoid the most dangerous impacts. We're already seeing them. But, you know, this is just the climate change impact side of things. Many of the solutions that we're going to talk about and highlight a little bit make sense for other reasons. And one of my favorite stats is that the average Washington State resident in recent years has spent about $2,500 on fossil fuel purchases only. So natural gas in their homes, gas and diesel in their cars. And almost all of that $2,500 per woman, man, child leaves our economy. So if we can take some of that money and reinvest it in things that make ourselves more efficient and renewable energy, then we have a great economic opportunity locally. So a little bit of context in terms of what our footprint is across King County and all 39 King County cities. In terms of greenhouse gas emissions, and greenhouse gas emissions are the main source of human-caused climate change, transportation and building energy use dominate our footprint. So that just frames what types of solutions you might work on. And then it's also becoming increasingly apparent that the stuff that we buy, whether it's food from outside of the county or electronics imported from Asia, that has a footprint, an environmental footprint too. I'm not going to go into details, but there's a whole wealth of information. There is some good news in terms of progress. So per person greenhouse gas emissions across King County have been on the decline in recent years. This is primarily driven by less driving and also due to increased building energy efficiency. So I'm going to pass it off to Nicole. She's going to talk about the recent February climate summit and some work that's going on across King County cities.
Hi, thanks for having us tonight. My name is Nicole Sanders. I'm an associate planner with the city of Snoqualmie. I've been working there for about 5 years. We have a population of about 12 to 13,000 people, and we got started on climate change issues, well, probably in 2007, a bit before I got there, but I pretty much came on board around 2009. So, like Matt said, I'm going to go over a bit of existing greenhouse gas reduction goals, as well as some of the work that we've been doing in the collaboration and how the collaboration got started. So, we already have about 17 cities in King County that have signed on to something called the U.S. Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement, which came out in about 2007, which set greenhouse gas reduction goals based on 1990 emissions limits. And as Matt already said, there's a current countywide planning policies calling for the GMPC to set a countywide emissions target. This just shows that three-quarters of King County's population already lives in a city with some sort of established greenhouse gas reduction goal. Our process got started about in 2009 when a PhD candidate named Linda Leischall came in because she was studying what different cities were doing on climate issues, and found out that a lot of us already had existing policies on greenhouse gas reductions in our comprehensive plans. In addition, as we began to talk amongst each other, we found out that a lot of us had separate initiatives and goals and policies and stuff, but a lot of times it was uncoordinated, which means that individual cities were expending more staff time and money working individually on projects that could be implemented as a multi-city initiative. So we thought we would have a lot to learn from each other and eventually formed the King County Cities Climate Collaboration, which has become just the K4C. It's a voluntary but formal interlocal agreement where we partner on climate change-related outreach, coordination, and solutions, as well as applying for grant applications for different projects. Already, we've been participating in roundtables, which are mostly educational sessions, municipal revolving energy fund guidance, staff trainings, as well as joining together on joint comment letters on different state issues. In February, we came together. So there was about 9 cities that have joined the K4C. And in February, we had a summit that involved about 13 cities where we brought different electeds together to explore emission patterns in the county, learn about what other regions are doing across the United States, and also discuss potential city-county actions that we could take together to reduce emissions. So this is actually a presentation given usually by one of the consultants we hired to study greenhouse gas emission patterns. She is at home celebrating her marriage anniversary. So excuse me if I stumble a little bit more than usual on these slides. So basically, leading guidance is that you'd want to reduce your 2012 emissions by about 80% by 2050. But we think that 2050 is kind of hard to imagine, and a lot of times a lot of the actions you need for long-term reductions take a lot of negotiation and time to develop the infrastructure. So what we asked for was an analysis of what it might take to get to a 40% emissions reduction by 2030. So this is an energy and carbon map. I'll go over it in a very high level. It basically shows on the left and the right-hand side the greenhouse gas emissions per metric ton. And then the colored sections are indicating the generator sources, so your hydropower, your coal, the number of the natural gas as well as petroleum. And we found that 90% of King County's electricity and natural gas use was resulting in the greenhouse gas, had a correlation 90% for greenhouse gas reduction, emissions. Let's see. Thank you. And so then a lot of times your greenhouse gas emissions rise at about the same pace as your population. And so this was saying that basically the upward black slant is the growth scenario. By 2030, how much are emissions projected to increase? The red line is the 2012 emissions. And if you wanted to get a 50% reduction by 2030, it's that downward sloping green line. Well, the consultants have done this work before, and they said, well, there's a lot of existing laws out there that are actually going to achieve some pretty significant reductions. Those should be taken into account when you're developing your programs. So, for instance, there's a corporate average fuel economy standard, which is going to reduce your corporate fleet fuel emissions. There's a renewable portfolio standard, which requires your utilities to incorporate a certain amount of renewable energy. And Washington State Energy Code has recently been updated, so your houses are way more energy efficient than they ever have been before. New buildings will have those. That will also result in reductions. So projecting forward, that will actually bring us slightly below 2012 emissions. But if you wanted to get to that 2030 marker, you still have a ways to go. So basically what we then did is we got together as cities and we said, all right, well, you have the transportation, your energy efficiency, and your renewable energy sectors. What sort of goals would you need to put into place to get to that 40% reduction by 2030? And bounced around different numbers based on different research. A lot of this was also looking at a report that came out by John Cleveland, which is 80 by 50, which was looking at greenhouse gas reduction actions in different cities across the United States, like Chicago, New York, San Francisco. What are they looking to do? So we basically zeroed on these percentage reductions. When you begin to break those down, you can see that if you aim for about 15% cleaner vehicles, 20% reduction in vehicle miles traveled, a 25% reduction in building energy use beyond what energy codes will achieve today, as well as a 20% increase in renewable electricity, no more coal, and limited new natural gas generation for electricity. So the general findings of this study are that deep carbon reductions are ambitious, but they are achievable, and that existing laws are important, but they will not alone meet the goal that we would like to seek as a region. State, regional, and local levers of change are essential and available to meet 2030 and 2050 goals, and that coordinated local and regional action is needed to achieve ambitious carbon reduction targets. So I'm actually going to go off of the slides for a moment and just talk for a minute about why a small city like Snoqualmie is actually getting involved. So like I said, we have about 12,000 persons, but a lot of the changes that Matt was discussing earlier that we're already seeing in our areas imply deep changes that might also be needed for city systems. So, for instance, if you have larger storm events, our storm water conveyance systems, our piping, are they being sized appropriately if we are indeed going to be seeing larger storms? And we have been seeing larger storms. In Snoqualmie, about 400 to 500 of our houses are in downtown, which is all in the floodplain and a lot of it in the floodway. So over the last 10 years, we've been doing lots of house raisings, actually, because in the last 15 years, we've already been hit with two really big floods. We have the largest number of flood claims in the state. And then also, too, I don't know if you've heard on the news, the wildfires that were going on in Alaska, 300 square miles burned on the Kenai Peninsula recently. It's the largest wildfire in the peninsula in recorded history. And in the last decade, the average Alaskan state burn rate of 1 million acres per year has actually increased over the last decade to 1.8. My home state is California, which when I checked on the U.S. drought monitor today, the entire state is severe drought, and then a majority is in extreme and exceptional drought stages, which was a very dark shade of red, which covered all of the agricultural valley, which is where I'm from. I'm from the San Joaquin Valley. The San Joaquin Valley is responsible for 50% of U.S. Fruit and vegetable nut generation. And you aren't going to probably see a price hit from that drought, although it is severe, because a lot of the farmers in that area are digging down into wells, and they've all been sucking up the water in the aquifers and the wells, that it actually is subsiding. The entire San Joaquin Valley and area, the state of Rhode Island, is subsiding 11 inches annually. And at some point, when your aquifers collapse, they can't actually be recharged. And then, already among the raptor population, golden eagles actually aren't nesting in the state right now because they don't actually have enough small rodents and insects to eat. They're actually extremely emaciated. And the historic, a lot of animal populations are seeing these hits. So the point being that, yes, we have these flexible systems that are really adjustable and dynamic, and we have amazing technology. But we're beginning to see persistent problems that technology can't take care of. And at some point, if you have the San Joaquin Valley collapse, the agricultural system there, you will see increases in your food production prices, which means that every household in the United States is going to be hit economically. And there's lots of things that we can do as cities to help with these things. So when you have energy-efficient fleet vehicles, you're not spending your money on, you know, petroleum gas, for instance, or less money on that. And if you have a lot of houses that are built before the 1980s when there wasn't insulation, you can participate in weatherization programs with other cities and do that with less expense. I'm trying to coordinate something like that with the Snoqualmie Valley cities, for instance. And then also, too, if you're seeing a decrease in your Cascade snowpack annually, a lot of our hydropower, which helps give us really cheap energy in this area, those snowpacks act like batteries so that when the snow melts, it fills up our hydropower systems and gives us cheap energy. When we don't have the snowpack batteries in place, our ability to generate power from hydropower is decreased, which means our energy prices might go up. We have to buy more from out of state, which then impacts your business community. So the thing is it's a really big problem in a lot of ways, but by working together with other small cities and other larger cities when it's available too, I feel there's a really great ability to help us adjust to some of these changes as they come about with greater efficiency and less cost. So that's generally why I think our mayor has been taking a step up and has been reaching out to other Snoqualmie Valley cities to do this sort of work.
Thank you, Nicole. So just to recap and add to what Nicole said a little bit, when people are talking about this long-term challenging problem of climate change and throwing out these ambitious goals for greenhouse gas emission reductions, it often doesn't, it's unclear what that means. And so what the work of the climate collaboration has been recently has been focused on, you know, what would that mean for our local geography in King County, for King County cities over the next 20 years. And so the findings are that, you know, there are these really important big picture things like increasing efficiency of vehicles, renewable energy by the utilities that are going to help us get part of the way. But there's still a gap of things that can be done at a local and regional scale that will help reduce emissions further. And so that's leading into the focus of the work that's going on right now. So next Thursday, the executive and Mayor of Mercer Island are reconvening elected officials from across the county to really go into detail about a set of collaborative actions in these spheres of renewable energy, energy efficiency, transportation, forestry, collaboration that will help push the bar for climate action. And so I just wanted to also provide a little bit of context about what's going on in the policy world of climate in King County right now. So there are countywide planning policies that are before the Growth Management Planning Council that basically state that there should be establishment of a countywide greenhouse gas emission reduction target in a measurement framework to measure progress towards that target. The baseline is to rely on the state's emission reduction requirement, but several cities, five cities in the county, and the county have more ambitious targets. And so these more ambitious targets are aligned with this 80% reduction by 2015 long-term goal. And those are the targets that the scientific community has set in terms of avoiding temperature increases of more than 2 degrees centigrade. And so these are targets that are based on science, consistent with leaders, but and they're ambitious but achievable, as shown in the analysis that we presented. So I think that's a lot of information really quickly. We're happy to answer questions, talk about, you know, everything from climate science to what's going on in the climate collaboration. I really encourage Black Timon to have a representative at the June 12th summit if you're interested in this issue and moving forward. Thank you.
Council, do you have questions?
Well, I guess I do. So what would a small city like, Black Diamond do? You know, we have 4,000 citizens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So can you give some examples, you know, what we could do today?
Right. So we have a handout that Matt and me prepared earlier on different actions. For me, what some of my near-term goals is I really want to work, like I said, with the other Snoqualmie Valley cities on a weatherization program. We do have a lot of houses that were built before then. We have a lot of houses that are 100 years old, honestly. So, you know, if it's before the 1980s, you don't have insulation, your money is literally going out the windows. So PSC actually has a lot of rebates that they already offer for people to do weatherization. And there's a group called Sustainable Works that that helps to do outreach on weatherization. And usually those pay off within 5 to 7 years. I want to talk to them and get some specific numbers. But that would be a really good example program. And the thing is that when you participate with the staff, you're like, hey, can I have your Word document, contracts, agenda bills, your council letter? You know, we share information, and then it really saves time, and it makes it a lot easier for us to do that kind of coordination. So that's a really good example, I think.
So another, you know, kind of suite of examples are that many cities are already doing things that are directly climate solutions that they don't often think of as climate solutions. So if you're doing any work on more efficient vehicles for your fleets, or green building, or recycling, or you know, more efficient transportation systems, or pedestrian infrastructure, there are a lot of these solutions that, you know, help reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but are being implemented for other reasons, for community safety, for walkability. That's important to highlight. So I'll provide, there's just a two-pager of example strategies that cities in King County that might look to in terms of on-the-ground actions that can be taken.
And what does it cost for a city to join the 12 cities that are already?
We were talking about lowering the rate. Carnation wants to join, and they're small. So originally it was 500 for an under 5,000, I think, and we might reduce that even.
Yeah,
some of the larger, some cities might voluntarily put in more. So I might try to have Snoqualmie put in more, but yeah, it's not.
Yeah, so the main point is that when cities join the collaboration, we want it to be a collaborative effort, and so that's the main reason why there's any funding ask at all, just to make sure that cities who are signing up are really engaged and have thought about it and processed it. So right now the smallest cities contribute $500, but we are considering lowering that for even smaller cities. Yep. Yes?
Well, I was just curious because I know we had more than average snowpack this year in the Cascades. Mm-hmm. How does that affect your statistics? Because you had statistics from 2010 and 2012.
Sure. Yeah.
How does that affect that percentage?
Yeah, so there are always going to be hot years and cold years and wet years and dry years. when we're talking about climate change, we're talking about the long-term trends. So you can think about it that the average year is what's changing, but there's still going to be a lot of variability from year to year. And we're in a region of the world where there's particularly a lot of variability from year to year, especially in precipitation. We have strong signals in our climate from things like El Nino and La Nina that dominate, you know, the year-to-year variability. But when we're talking about climate change, we're talking about the long-term trends. Yeah.
It's a friend of mine who also works in a similar field. He said another good term for it is climate weirding instead of warming, because it's that rather than the stable sort of systems, you get both sort of these long-term trends, but then sometimes your variability can even get more extreme, which makes it kind of confusing and counterintuitive sometimes. Yeah.
So when we're presenting statistics, we're not, you know, comparing last year to a previous year. We're comparing, you know, decades to, you know, previous decades and even longer timescales than that. I'll stop there.
Great. Well, thank you for coming tonight, sir. Yeah. It was very informative. Now, to be fair, we're moving on to a climate change counterview presentation. This will be given by Bob Edelman.
I'm a denier and a flat earther.
I'm Bob Edelman, 29871 232nd Avenue Southeast, Black Diamond. Thank you for including me on the agenda. I won't be discussing the specific actions that you heard about and I propose. I believe we all support those that show a demonstrable economic benefit to the city. But the city is ill-advised to take drastic action based on the hypothesis that we are facing catastrophic climate change caused by man. The premise is wrong. The science is not settled, despite what you've been hearing. The claim has been made repeatedly that the science is settled, that human activity is a primary cause of climate change, and the results will be disastrous. These claims are based on biased reviews of samples of published papers using faulty criteria. The claim started with an analysis by a social scientist, Dr. Naomi Oreskes, of 928 published papers, actually the abstracts of the papers, containing the phrase global climate change. Dr. Benny Pizer attempted to replicate her study and found contrary results. His review included the following statement. The most significant discrepancy with Oreskes' results concern abstracts that are undecided whether human activities are the dominant driving force of recent warming. My analysis shows that a significant number of abstracts reject what Oreskes calls a consensus view. In fact, there are almost three times as many abstracts that are unconvinced of the notion of anthropogenic climate change than those that explicitly endorse it. By anthropogenic, that means man-caused. Actual surveys of scientists have showed that there is no true consensus. There's three that I'm familiar with. Two German environmental scientists, Dennis Bray and Hans von Storch conducted an extensive survey of 530 climate scientists from 27 different countries in 2003. A similar survey was conducted in 1996. On the critical assertion human activity is causing climate change, only 55.8% agreed, 30% disagreed, and the rest were uncertain. More recently, and more importantly, a 2012 survey by the American Meteorological Society of its members found that just 52% agreed that global warming was caused by humans, while the rest either questioned whether global warming was happening at all or that human activity was a primary cause. There's no consensus. Even if there were, it would have no value in science. Hypotheses aren't proven by taking a vote. If they were, then it would have been a lot easier for me to get my math degree. I'll now address some of the specific claims made by local and state government officials to support drastic action that increasing air temperature, ocean acidification, rising sea level, decreasing snowpack, and changing river flow are examples of climate change impacts that are already occurring. These claims are either unproven or proven to be false. Regarding increasing air temperatures, please look at the graph that I just handed out. The colored spaghetti is predictions of global warming based upon a large number of computer models, none of which have ever been validated. The black line is the average of those predictions. Much of the fear of global warming and its effects was because of those predictions. Fortunately, we have actual data from satellite and balloon measurements for what has been actually happening the past 35 years. Those measurements are shown in squares and circles near the bottom of the graph. Actual warming has been about 0.2°C over the 35-year period, while the models predicted three times as much. There has been no warming for the past 15 years, and that has confounded the modelers. There is no correlation to greenhouse gas emissions, which have increased significantly during that time. In other words, the influence of human activity on natural climate change has been demonstrated to be negligible. The billions of dollars spent on trying to model and control the climate are wasted. Now, regarding ocean acidification, I need to start out with a short tutorial. If you remember high school chemistry, pH is a measurement of hydrogen ions. Anything above a pH of 7 is alkaline, and below 7 is acidic. Ocean water is alkaline, with an average global pH around 8, although there are numerous local surface variations. When they say acidification, what they mean is it's a lowering of the pH and becoming less alkaline. It doesn't mean turning into an acid. Not much can be said about ocean acidification because not much is known. We do know that some atmospheric CO2 dissolves in ocean water from rain and other mechanisms. Some of the dissolved CO2 forms carbonic acid, a weak acid. Added carbonic acid will cause the ocean water to be less alkaline, but so will any fresh water going into the ocean. The rate of change to the total ocean is so small that it's presently impossible to measure. In fact, a $2 million prize has been established for anyone who can devise an accurate method of measuring global ocean pH. Some people have been blaming local changes in pH on increased CO2 in the air. We've heard about an oyster farm on the coast that was having problems that were blamed on CO2, but there isn't any hard data that shows anthropogenic CO2 is a cause of lower pH in Washington state waters or for that matter, that lower pH is a cause of oyster farm problems. There are multiple other sources of problems. The natural upwelling of lower pH deep ocean water in our area, lower pH fresh water that flows in from the Columbia River, invasive predators, pollution from agriculture and industry, aquatic plants, and so on. Local emissions of CO2 being absorbed in local waters is probably low on the list. The coastal region doesn't produce much CO2. Now, regarding sea levels, scientists now have the means to not only measure the level of the oceans, but also the temperature, salinity, and mass change components of sea level change. A National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration analysis of satellite and ocean sensor data for the period 2005 through 2012 shows a minuscule increase of 1.6 millimeters per year, or about 7 inches per century. Observations from the Permanent Service for Mean Sea Level show the same trend since 1807. Quoting a recent research paper, quote, "This newest analysis of the most comprehensive data set available suggests that there has been no dramatic increase, or any increase for that matter, in the mean rate of global sea level rise due to the human increase in the atmosphere CO2 concentration," unquote. In other words, there's no evidence of human influence on sea levels. Now, regarding the decreasing snowpack and the related stream flows from the snowpack, claims have been made that the Cascade snowpack is disappearing. These statements are another result of junk science. A research associate professor at the University of Washington Department of Atmospheric Sciences, Mark Stolinga, conducted a study of the Cascade snowpack since 1930. During the period since 1975, when we were supposed to be experiencing rapid global warming, the only significant decline took place during the Pacific climate shift in 1977, and since then, the snowpack appears to have actually increased. The reason some researchers can claim to have found a decrease is that they use a starting year when the snowpack was unusually high, and then compute a linear trend from that year. Snowpack data is highly cyclic, so calculating trends is quite difficult and subject to large statistical error. In the words of Stolinga, quote, "Snowpack trends since the ramp-up in global temperature in the 1970s is slightly positive, although the range of the possible true trend is huge," unquote. Increases in atmospheric CO2 have had no discernible effect. In conclusion, my remarks have been necessarily brief because of the time constraints. I may not have convinced anyone, but I hope that you all will have a healthy skepticism of assertions that we must take drastic action to forestall a climate catastrophe caused by mankind. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heldman. We are now on to agenda item number one. This is a public hearing to hear oral testimony regarding the proposed six-year transportation improvement plan. The public hearing is now open. Mr. Boucher, our public works director, will give a brief overview of the plan. After that, anyone wishing to address council on this public hearing, please come to the podium and clearly state your name and address and limit your comments to 5 minutes. And if you have any material you'd like submitted for the record, please give a copy to the city clerk. Seth?
Thank you, Mayor and Council. This is an annual exercise of updating, looking into our future needs, taking off what we've completed, looking what opportunities we might have in projects that might apply, where we can get grants. And we have started this several months ago in the capital planning process. We've had been through various committee meetings, workshops, and in the capital planning side. And this is an opportunity to get some comments from the public. I want to just briefly review kind of the benefits of doing this, and a good way to do that is just kind of look back at what we've done in the last 6 years. These are projects that were funded largely by grants, Railroad Avenue reconstruction, Morgan Street improvements, including sidewalks from the school to Abrams, Morgan Street improvements, sidewalks and overlay from Abrams to Roberts, Roberts Drive, sidewalk and lighting from Morgan Street to the library, Lake Sawyer Road overlay, about 2,000 feet, West 288th Street overlay, about 2,000 feet, the east portion of 288th Street overlay, and that was another 2,000 feet. And then looking what we're going to be doing here fairly shortly, the Lawson Street sidewalk from 169 to 6th Avenue, and the bridge rehab on Roberts Drive, sidewalk pedestrian improvements up to Sunny Lane. I guess with that, I'll be prepared to take notes from comments. Thank you.
Would anyone like to address council? Yes.
George McPherson, 29062, 222nd Place Southeast, Black Diamond, Washington. This is in regard to the previous presentation we had. The only question I have is both of the previous speakers gave their credentials in terms of training and so forth and understanding of the global warming situation. The last speaker didn't.
Point of order.
And I was just wondering what his qualifications are.
This is supposed to be public testimony. On a different issue.
Yeah, this is public testimony for the six-year transportation improvement plan. I invite you to give your comments during our second public comment session. Would somebody like to address the six-year transportation improvement plan? Yes, sir.
How much time do I have?
5 minutes, sir.
Okay, thank you. My name is Peter Rimbos, 19711 241st Avenue, Southeast Maple Valley. I am speaking again on behalf of the Citizens Technical Action Team. Yesterday, our team submitted detailed written comments to you on the 2015-2020 Transportation Improvement Plan. Tonight, I'll briefly summarize them. One, we remain concerned with the over-reliance on grant monies. While we fully understand grant requests are typically shown in the TIP to help secure such monies, we strongly recommend the city develop a contingency plan should project grant monies fall short and or not support schedule needs. Number two, we are alarmed that the planned two-lane roundabout at Roberts Drive and SR 169 is only 50% funded by the master developer, whose MPDs will be generating well over 90% of the traffic throughput and commuting time. The voters' mandate in the last two landslide elections was that growth should be paying for growth. Three, we have reservations about the Rock Creek Bridge improvements, several of them. A, the so-called add-on pedestrian walkway is a concern. B, load limit on the bridge on designated King County truck route. C, costs associated with a Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife hydraulic project approval permit, as defined by Section 53 of WAC 220-110-020, could be considerable to assure habitat protection and adequate fish passage. And D, the transportation improvement project calls for an add-on pedestrian walkway, while the transportation improvement board project 6P800 2002-1, which provides a great deal of the funding, calls for a separate pedestrian bridge. That's a direct conflict. Number four, three villages MPD PP1A intersections along Harbor and Black Diamond Road continue not to be included in the Transportation Improvement Plan, even though the City Hearing Examiner's PP1A decision included conditions 17, 18, and 19. These conditions specifically call for construction of all three intersections to be complete prior to the issuance of certificates of occupancy for the full PP1A 1,192 equivalent residential units. Council, we request you carefully review our detailed written comments submitted yesterday prior to your deliberation on and moving forward on the Transportation Improvement Plan as currently written. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rambos. Would anyone else like to address Council? Okay, the public hearing is now closed. So, agenda item 2 was pulled from the agenda, and we're going to add agenda items 3 through 8 to the consent agenda. That brings us now to agenda item 9, a resolution authorizing the mayor and one finance committee member to enter into contracts for goods and services. Mrs. Morris, can you address council on this?
Yes, the council asked me to bring forward a resolution that authorized the mayor and one member of the finance committee to enter into contracts for the purchase of goods or services where the contract amount is $7,500 or less and where there's money to cover the purchase in the city's budget, or up to $15,000 where the purchase is for goods or services specifically included as a line item in the city's budget. Formally, the resolution, well, I should say the existing resolution, allows the mayor to make these types of purchases alone.
Thank you, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Can I have a motion adopting resolution number 14-957?
I move to adopt resolution 14-951, authorizing the mayor to execute an amendment. I flipped to the wrong page. Motion to adopt resolution number 14-957, authorizing the mayor and one member of the finance committee to enter into contracts for the purchase of goods and services where the contract amount is $7,500 or less, and there is money to cover the purchase in the city's budget, or up to $15,000 for the purchases for goods or services specifically included as a line item in the city's budget.
I second it.
Okay, we have a motion from Councilmember Taylor and a second from Councilmember Benson. Is there any further discussion?
I'd like to make a comment, too. The reason that this is happening is because we as the council have a fiduciary responsibility, and we need to be paying attention to what's going on with that budget that we did pass. And I think, as we all know, the last few months, money has been leaving our coffers at quite a remarkable speed. This is a way of allowing the council to have a foot in the door at the beginning of the process, as opposed to the two of us that are on the council that are members of the finance committee that only find out about an expenditure when we get the bill and we get a request for that payment. And so I think it's a really good idea. This is not intended to usurp the authority of the mayor. This is to help to make sure that what we're doing is the right thing. And so with that, I fully support this.
And Mr. Taylor.
Yeah, I'll comment on it as well. Councilmember Edelman stated it well. Basically, what we are wanting to do, because the council is the responsible entity for the finances of the city, we do want to make sure that somebody on the council has an awareness of the expenditures as they're being expended. You have to understand that what the finance committee normally does is they basically balance the checkbook after the funds have been spent. This is a way, like was said, for the someone on the Finance Committee to be involved when the check's being written. There are all kinds of organizations and public entities and whatnot that have two signature lines on their checks. That's basically what this is, just to have two people involved so that there's a greater awareness and that sort of thing. So that's what this is about.
Anyone else? Councilmember Morgan.
One of the things that I have seen that has been happening is it's possible for city administrators, even though we don't have one right now, and staff generally, to kind of pile on to the mayor's signature and use that part of the spending game, shall I say. And truthfully and honestly, I've been the treasurer for about seven different organizations, voluntary organizations, and I would never ever want to have the have it come on to myself that I'm spending public money that belongs essentially to other people, another entity, without having someone else's signature on there to back me up. Just because, you know, the way it is in the world, people are apt to think this or that other expenditure was frivolous. And I just have always been very, very appreciative in my execution of those positions to know that I at least had someone else, so nobody was going to be pointing the finger directly at me. There was at least two ways for it to go. So I fully support this as well.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
And all those opposed? Motion carries. We're now on to the mayor's report. I attended the SCA dinner, and we had the Tri-City meeting, which was very informative. And I have an action item to recruit the Enumclaw mayor and their staff to next year's meeting. And so I'll be working on that. I'd like to point out that staff is mowing the shoulder of the road around the city, so you'll be seeing them out there hard at work. And staff is also working on a water problem where water is running into the street on 4th and Baker. So we'll see what comes of that investigation. We're now on to council reports. The council standing committee and regional committees. Council member Benson.
I attended the skateboard meeting, and basically their agenda was basically around Metro Transit and King County and what they plan on doing and how their plan was put in, how their agenda was set, and the skateboard decided to take a position on that, and they're writing a letter to King County and to Metro about how unrealistic the amount of money that we put into Metro, and we have our services cut, and we're already getting less. We put in 50% and get 20%, and so anyway, they just put out that letter, just came out yesterday, so we're going to be supporting that position by skateboard. And I attended the chamber luncheon, and we had a speaker that talked about the American dream, that he came here to this country, I think he said 30 years ago, and how successful he has been, and now he spends his time training other people and giving speeches. And then I also attended the Tri-City meeting on Tuesday.
Council Member Edelman.
Okay. We have our Public Issues Committee meeting is next week, so I have nothing to report on that. Although I will warn the council, I had sent a memo out with a summary of what happened in the last PIC meeting, and I'm going to need some guidance. So probably not tomorrow because I'm headed out of town, but by Monday I'm going to send you all an email reminding you that I need some input because we need to make some decisions as a council that doesn't need to be taken up meeting time. And then my activities, since it's been so long since we had a meeting, on the 17th of May, I went to the Reserve Officer graduation, so you got to see the officers tonight. It was really kind of an honor and a privilege to watch that. That was pretty neat. On the 22nd, I met with the city clerk, and then I also attended the Finance Committee meeting. On the 28th, I attended the SCA dinner. On the 3rd, I attended the Planning and Community Services meeting and the Tri-City Council meeting as well. And then I also attended the Chamber of Commerce luncheon. That's it.
Councilmember Dee.
Well, on top of everything that's already listed here, I also attended the SCA dinner and the Tri-City meeting. I did attend the Memorial Day service at the cemetery. And with Janie, she does need your input for the PIC meeting because it also funnels down to me at the GMPC meeting that we just heard tonight that I'm going to have a stance for the city on. So it's very important that I get a response from everybody, as well as Janie, to know where we stand so that we are informed representatives of the city when we're sitting at the table.
And Councilmember Taylor.
Okay. For public safety, obviously, you saw the swearing in of the reserve officers tonight. There will be a public safety meeting tomorrow where we'll take up, you know, the usual things. There was also a recent meeting of the ad hoc committee, kind of diverged a little bit from their usual looking into fire service and performed a kind of SWAT meeting. That's not special weapons and tactics. That's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. It's basically an audit of the fire service, you know, what things are doing well, what things can be improved, and that sort of thing. So that was constructive. The fire district invited the council members on the ad hoc committee to join them in considering those issues for the city specifically. As far as the Public Works Committee, as you can see, some things are starting to happen for the council chambers. The benches are gone. Work is starting to take place. Carpet's being picked out and paint and that sort of thing. So you'll see more. You'll see more changes here shortly. At the meeting, several of the projects that are ongoing, we just discussed several of them. Most of them are in studies or research, that sort of thing. I won't go into all of them. I will say that I threw our public works director a bit of a curve at our last meeting, and I know we've been talking about repainting the water tank, and I brought up the subject of what is the business case of either repainting that or we know that tank's going to have to be replaced here at some point as well. So should we really be looking at that angle before we go ahead and commit ourselves to the painting? So anyway, we're kind of taking a second look at that. And I also attended the Tri-City meeting, and that's it for me.
Council Member Morgan.
Oh, hi. I was at the Tri-City meeting. I've been meeting with citizens pretty regularly, Monday, Wednesday, and Sunday before last.
I bet nobody missed me. I missed my last Saturday library time. I went to the Roy Rodeo to do something completely and totally different. And then we were also at the planning and community services meeting.
Thank you very much. Mrs. Morris, is there an attorney report? Thank you. We're now on to the second public comment period. Is there anyone wishing to address council? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. This is the time.
I'll get my name again. George McPherson, 29062, 222nd Place Southeast. I came tonight just to hear about the comments on global warming. It was a very good report. The thing is, the two people that were here first gave their backgrounds and so forth and knowledge about the subject. The second speaker didn't. And I think if we hear somebody like that who has come to speak on a subject as involved as this one is, we should know what background that person has. So that's the thing. The other thing that I hope, and I appreciate very much, Councilman Didi, that you invited the people here to speak about that, because it's a subject that even this town is affected by global warming. I hope we find our city involved in that, as the rest of the cities in King County, most of them are involved. I hope the city does involve itself with this group. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Mayor. May I respond?
Yes.
Since I guess Bob has left the building. He's not feeling well. Just so that you know, because Bob is my husband, that he has his undergraduate degree in mathematics from Georgia Tech. He has a master's degree from MIT in business management. He is also the type of guy, as most of the people in this room know, that once he gets a hold of a subject, he doesn't stop until he becomes an expert, but he's a self-taught expert. And he has been doing research on this subject for years and years. He actually wrote a paper when the Al Gore movie came out, The Inconvenient Truth. And he took that movie issue by issue, researched the statements that were made, and rebutted a lot of them with facts. So he may not be a geologist, or he may not have a fancy degree in climatology, but he does his research, and he can back up what he says with facts. So, George, I encourage you, if you want to call him and talk to him about it, please do. I would encourage that.
Yes, sir, if you'd like to respond.
You may want to come back up here, though. I'm sorry, just so it gets on the record.
This is a very technical subject we're talking about, and I don't know. These people do know what it's about. They have a background in it. There are many people in mathematics, and you can find people on each side of this. But I think one of the people that I heard very knowledgeable about the subject said this. If your child is ill and you had a chance to go to 100 different doctors to find out what was wrong with him, and 97% said he had measles and 3% said he didn't, who would you believe? And as I understand it, 97% of scientists on this subject believe that global warming is here and it's happening now. 3% you can find who don't believe that. So that's kind of where I am on this thing. I've read about it too, and I guess a lot of people have. That's where I am.
Well, I'm not going to dispute that here.
So that's
your discussion with Bob.
George, just one question.
Yes.
Would you approve of the city donating money into that?
Yes.
Thank you for approving, sir. Mr. Rimbos.
Can I take some of the 5 minutes I didn't use last time?
No.
Because I'm going to need it. My name is Peter Rimbos, 19711 241st Avenue, Southeast Maple Valley. I am speaking for myself. I feel compelled to clarify some of what we heard my good friend and teammate, Bob Edelman, said tonight on climate change. George, I'll give my credentials later if I have time, but I'm not a climate scientist. The climate has been changing on Earth for the past 4-plus billion years. Such climate change events, which are about 100 thousands of years in duration, have had profound effects on the Earth's terrain and biological life. However, all those events occurred before human species emerged and thus were caused by natural means. We have been slowly going through a climate change event since the last ice age. However, this time a new unpredictable variable has been introduced, humans, who have accelerated the warming event. Unfortunately, the science of climate change has become a political and ideological football. This could prove dangerous for us and future generations. Here are but a few of the myths perpetuated by the deniers of climate change science and the facts. Myth: the climate has changed before. Fact: the Earth's climate has changed in the past, and ice cores and other measures tell us why. Based on this knowledge and other types of evidence, we know the human-generated emissions of greenhouse gases are warming the climate and at a pace unseen in the geologic record. Myth: it's the sun doing all this. Fact: over the last 35 years, the sun has shown a slight cooling trend. However, global temperatures have been increasing. Since the sun and climate are going in opposite directions, scientists conclude the sun cannot be the cause of recent global warming. Myth: there is not a scientific consensus. Fact: that humans are causing global warming is the position of the academies of sciences from 80 countries, plus a plethora of scientific organizations that study climate science. More specifically, around 95% of active climate researchers actively publishing climate papers endorse the consensus position. Myth: CO2 doesn't cause global warming. Fact: the effect of adding man-made CO2, let me start again, fact: the effect of adding man-made CO2 is predicted in the theory of greenhouse gases. This theory was first proposed by Swedish scientist Svante Arrhenius in 1896, based on the earlier work by Fourier and Tyndall. Many scientists have refined the theory over the last 118 years. Nearly all have reached the same conclusion. If we increase the amount of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, the Earth will warm up. The greenhouse effect is well understood and demonstrated. Do we have a real-life example of greenhouse gases causing climate change? Yes. It's called the planet Venus. Today, Venus is very different than Earth. It has a surface pressure of 90 bars, which is 1,300 psi, compared with one bar, 14.3 psi, on Earth. Its atmosphere is mostly CO2. The huge atmospheric depth and CO2 amount are the reason Venus has a surface temperature of nearly 500 degrees centigrade, which is about 930 Fahrenheit. But Venus wasn't always the brutish place it is today. It's been theorized that Venus began its existence with a similar atmosphere to the Earth and possessed oceans. What happened to turn Venus into a planetary hell? The answer is that Venus suffered a runaway greenhouse effect that fed upon itself. We do not want to trigger a runaway greenhouse effect here on Earth, but we could be getting close should Siberian tundra start melting and the release of vast amounts of methane, a very powerful and potent greenhouse gas, are released. That's just one possible greenhouse.
Mr. Rimbos, you've used your time.
I have one last sentence.
One more sentence.
Human accelerated climate change is serious stuff. So let's get serious about it and stop denying it's happening. Let's not have future generations asking, they knew this was happening, why did they choose to do nothing about it? My credentials are that I've read over 30 climate change books. I have a master's degree in civil engineering. I am not a climate scientist, but I've researched this for the past 35 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rimbos. Would anyone else like to address counsel? Yes, madam.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Myra Hoke, 32216 Watts Drive, Black Diamond. Thank you for being here tonight, letting me speak. I just wanted to make a very short announcement, and that is that the Black Diamond Farmers Market is opening for the second season starting tomorrow. Our hours will be from 11 till 3 every Friday, and I wanted to very quickly run through some of the categories of vendors that will be available during the market. We have flowers, fruit, vegetables, plants, milk, strawberry shortcake, hot dogs, adoptable small dogs, jewelry, plant and garden design demonstrations, I think I said jewelry, clothing, cosmetics, ice cream, and that's for this opening week, and we hope to continue to build with new business and new entrepreneurs within the Black Diamond area. So come on out and support us. Yes, ma'am.
Are the adoptable dogs every Friday? Because if they are, I can't bring my kids.
They will not be. Yeah. They will not be every week, but they'll be safely tucked away in a little. You can check with me, and I'll give you the schedule, Tammy.
Is the kettle corn guy coming back?
I have not gotten. I have not heard from him yet this year, but I'm trying.
Okay.
Yeah, I miss him too. I love that guy. Any other questions?
You've got my vote.
Ooh. Thank you.
Anyone else like to address council? Yes, ma'am.
Robin Taylor, 32110 Botts Drive, Black Diamond. I have no credentials, but I can read. So that's what I'm going to do. And the main thing I was going to read, I left at home on my printer, so I'm going to wing it from the book called Unstoppable Global Warming Every 1500 Years. And this is by S. Fred Singer and Dennis T. Avery. First thing I want to read, though, is a quote from the then NASA Administrator, Michael Griffin, who was being interviewed for National Public Radio, and he was asked about global warming. He said, "I am not sure that it is fair to say that it is a problem we must wrestle with. I would ask, which human beings, where and when, are to be accorded the privilege of deciding that this particular climate that we have right here today, right now, is the best climate for all other human beings. I think that's a rather arrogant position for people to take." That's the quote that I wanted to open with. Now, I know there's all kinds of talk, but let's look at history. We've got ancient climate history. We've got modern climate history. We've got ice cores from the Vostok Glacier in Antarctica, which covers 400,000 years. We have two from two different ice sheets in Greenland, one in northern Greenland and one, I think, in southern Greenland, each almost nearly a mile long, 250,000 years they cover. Plus sediment cores in lakes all over the world and ocean floors, and stalagmites and pollen data fossils, if you can believe there's pollen fossils, but there are. So with this, they have shown that during the Holocene climate optimum, which was 11,500 years ago, the planet warmed from ice age to nearly present world temperatures within 100 years, with half of that warming taking place in 15 years. Ice melted, seas rose, forests expanded, trees replaced grass, and grass replaced deserts. 9,000 to 5,000 years ago, the climate optimum was warmer and wetter than present climate. Sahara and Arabian deserts supported hunting, herding, and some agriculture. Then there was the unnamed cooling event prior to the Roman warming, which took place. The warming took place 200 BC to 600 AD. And then there was the Dark Ages cooling, when the Roman Empire fell from 600 AD to 900 AD. The medieval warming, which actually was warmer than it is now. Proof of that is this. Cultivation of grapes for winemaking was extensive through the southern portion of England from about 1100 to around 1300. This represents a northward latitude extension of about 500 kilometers from where grapes are presently grown in France and Germany. With the coming of the 1400s, temperatures became too cold for sustained grape production, and the vineyards in these northern latitudes ceased to exist. It is interesting to note that at the present time, right now, today, the climate is still unfavorable for wine production in these areas. It was warmer then than it is now. Plus, there were forests that their tree lines in Central Europe were 100 to 200 meters farther up the mountainsides than they are now.
Madam, you've gone over your time.
I'm not surprised. I will be handing in my written stuff when I get it, Brenda. Thank you.
Mrs. Taylor, would you approve or recommend that the city contribute to the...
Global warming, follow the money. We have someone who created a movie called The Inconvenient Truth who is a multi-millionaire, if not billionaire, trading on this. Follow the money. I say do not send the money.
Would anyone else like to address council?
Are we allowed to speak again?
No, sir. You get 3 minutes, and you went way over yours. So. Okay, we'll close the second public comment period. We're now on to the consent agenda. And I'd like to remind everyone that we've incorporated agenda items 3 through 8 into the consent agenda. Can I have a motion adopting the consent agenda?
I make a motion to adopt the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion from Councilmember Benson and a second from Councilmember Deedy. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. We are now on to an executive session. The council will be going into an executive session to discuss with legal counsel pending litigation in pursuit of the authority of RCW 42.30.110, Section 1, Subsection I. The executive session is expected to last 25 minutes, and there will be no action taken following the session. We'll come back and adjourn the meeting.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes,
may we have 5 minutes before we start the executive session? Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, ma'am. That would be fine.
Okay.
I'm calling the meeting back to order. I'd like to entertain a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Benson and a second from Councilmember Deedy. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries and the meeting is adjourned.
All right.